You're listening to the Short Story Geeks podcast at shortstorygeeks.com.
This is episode 17 of the Short Story Geeks podcast for December 15th, 2011, with your hosts The Niche, Buck Turner, and Graveyard Greg, sponsored by GnomeCo Publications, the hardest working gnomes on the web, at gnomecopublications.com. That's GnomeCo with a G. Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of the Short Story Geeks podcast. I am your host, The Niche, and with me I have...
This is Buck Turner.
And this is Graveyard Greg.
And this week we actually have some short story headlines, which is a nice change, so we're going to jump right into that. First, I have, from the Vancouver Sun, a story called Slinging Ink, Funny Stories About Work. What this is Diverse Works Art Space, which is presumably an organization in Vancouver, has started a literary series where they are promoting just all kinds of creative writing. And what they do is they provide a topic, and then the writers, would-be writers, come up with the text, and whoever gets the nod as writing the best story gets a little $100 prize, which is not much, but it's, you know, more of a gesture than anything else. And they perform live in various places reading these stories aloud. So this particular one is a guy starts his new job, and immediately a dirty cowboy comes up to him and yells, "Where the is Dan?" And that sets the tone for the rest of his day. And it's just, you know, ridiculous stuff that happens to everybody at work. And I just thought this was a neat little sort of community thing, getting writers together, having fun with it. It's kind of like, instead of a poetry slam, it's a short fiction slam kind of idea, which I thought was a cool thing. That's what I have. Greg, what have you got?
Okay, over at the Comic Vine, there is an anthology. It's called Thought Bubble. It's published by Image Comics, and for the price of $2.99, you get 14 short stories, each with an, you know, a central character and really beautiful art to accompany a story. Most of these stories did only take up one page of the issue, and apparently the longest of the stories was only 4 pages long. What impressed the reviewer is how much of the characters the creative teams were able to relay to the readers with only a single page. So this definitely qualifies as short fiction, and according to this, the book is very diverse. Some of the stories are inspired by fairy tales, others are just plain old funny, and some are of the horror genre. The bad, though. The bad. It is not clear where we can see more work from these creators. With things like that, it is nice to know where to go to get more of their work, although some of these people can probably be looked up, like Andy Diggle. Andy Diggle is a prolific comic book writer. You can look him up on Google and find all kinds of stuff. All in all, the verdict is, great anthology. If there is going to be more, they'll probably be worth the money, and it's $2.99. Now, that may sound expensive to some of us who were used to buying comic books for a dollar, and nowadays they're going up to $3.99. It's a short story anthology, though. Go get it. It's illustrated. You can't go wrong with it.
Okay, then.
Yep, that's it for me.
And Buck.
And then I have an article here from the Story Prize blog. The Story Prize is an annual book award for short story collections, and they run a blog, naturally enough. Most organizations of this type do. And they've got an article from earlier this week by Sabina Murray, Why the Short Story Should Stand Tall. Kind of starts off from the perspective that the short story is underappreciated by readers, editors, reviewers, etc. But really kind of goes on to promote it in terms of not only have quite a number of august and famous people kind of cut their teeth and made amazing short stories, which everybody listening should probably know, but then kind of compares it to novel writing, and to say a short story would be analogous to a chapter in a novel, kind of going back to that collection prize, or the short story prize, that the short story as a collected work here is something to really think about, and to take those short stories and put them together into books.
Okay. Well, we'll have links for all that in the show notes, and from there we will move on to the discussion.
The Daleks command that you listen to the Short Story Geeks podcast at shortstorygeeks.com. Obey the Daleks! Obey! Obey!
Obey!
Obey!
Obey!
Obey!
Obey!
Obey!
My story for discussion this week is another Rex Stout, I've spoken before about the Nero Wolf stories by Rex Stout, and this one is called Before I Die. It's from the collection Trouble in Triplicate, and the story here, you know, the Rex Stout stories all center around the characters of Nero Wolf, who is this more or less homebound brain of a detective, and his leg man, Archie Goodwin. The framework of the story is that Archie basically goes out and gathers all the information for Nero Wolf, and Nero Wolf makes the brilliant deduction at the end. So it's a very clever synthesis of the noir detective in the form of, you know, sort of gumshoe Archie, and the cozy model in the form of brainiac Nero Wolf. There are hints sort of scattered throughout the stories that Nero Wolf may be descended from Sherlock Holmes, just as a sort of nod to the mystery genre aficionados. You have to look for those. They're subtle and hidden, but they're in there. But anyway, in the case of Before I Die, it's set in 1946, which obviously is while there's a war going on, and there is meat rationing going on in the war. So I'm going to read just the sort of introduction to give you a feel for what the story is like. Remember, this is supposed to have been written by Archie, the more hard-boiled detective of the two. That Monday afternoon in October, life indoors was getting to be more than I cared to take. Meaning, by indoors, the office of Nero Wolf, where I worked, on the ground floor of the house he owned on West 35th Street, not far from North River. Relief was due soon, since he spent 2 hours every afternoon, from 4 to 6, with the orchids up in the plant rooms on the roof. But it was still 30 minutes short of 4 o'clock, and I had had all of him I could stand for a while. I wasn't blaming him. I was merely fed up with him. It was smack in the middle of the great meat shortage, where millions of pigs and steers, much to the regret of the growers and slaughterers, had sneaked off and hid in order to sell their lives dear. And to Nero Wolf, a meal without meat was an insult. His temper had gotten so bad that I offered to let him eat me, and it would be best to skip his retort. By that Monday afternoon, he had got so desperate that he had started taking long walks, as, for instance, back and forth between the chair and the bookshelves, and sometimes even through the door to the front room which faced on 35th Street. So at 3:30 I told him I was going out for an errand down the street, and he was sunk so far in misery and malice that he didn't even demand to know what the errand was. Then, just as I was reaching for my hat on the rack on the wall, the doorbell rang. I let the hat wait, stepped to the door and opened it, and what I saw jerked my mind loose from the fastenings where it had got glued onto Wolf's hoof. Standing there on the stoop was one of the most obvious articles I had ever looked at. Though the sun had been shining all day, and still was, he had on a raincoat, belted tight. His hat, a glossy black felt number, was too small for him, and it looked out of place for the lids of his light gray eyes to be open, because his face was embalmed, or at least after he had breathed his last and had been embalmed, his face would look exactly the way it looked now. "Your name's Goodwin," he told me impolitely, without overexerting any muscles. "Thanks," I thanked him. "How much do I weigh?" So the guy on the doorstep is basically a gunman for gangster by the name of Dazzy Parrott, who wants to hire Nero Wolf on something of a shady job. Normally, Nero Wolf wouldn't have anything to do with Dazzy Parrott, but in the case of the meat shortage, it's gotten so bad that Nero Wolf is willing to work with gangsters if it means he can get into the underground meat market. So, basically, in exchange for a bunch of pork chops, he takes on this job for this gangster. Basic storyline is that Dazzy Parrott has a daughter that he wants to keep secret, because obviously, if any of the rival gangsters found out he had a daughter, they'd have a potent weapon to use against him. But somewhere along the line, a rival gangster named Thumbs Meeker has discovered that Dazzy has his daughter, and so Dazzy Parrott has hired an actress to pretend to be his daughter instead of having anyone go after his real daughter, and this pretend daughter has started blackmailing Dazzy Parrott. So Nero Wolf's job is to get the pretend daughter to stop blackmailing Dazzy Parrott somehow. But things get complicated from there when the pretend daughter gets assassinated. The story just gets more and more complex from there. You do eventually meet the real daughter, who doesn't know that her father is this gangster and is, you know, a very sweet girl. And there's a lot of gangland intrigue. So we've got gangsters killing other gangsters, and Nero Wolf and Archie Goodwin sort of being caught up in the middle of all this nonsense and trying to figure out how to navigate it and still come out with their pork chops at the end. Like all of the Nero Wolf stories, it's very enjoyable, very light read. It was also dramatized on the A&E series with Timothy Hutton and Maury Chaykin, and that was very good as well. So I recommend it in basically any form. That's mine.
That sounds like I may have to go out and get this now just from listening to you.
Well, Trouble in Triplicate has been released many times. paperback edition that I have was about $6 when I bought it, and that was something like 10 years ago. So it's probably available electronically as well.
Hooray! But now it's my turn, isn't it?
It is your turn.
I'm going to review a short story by an author whom I have spoken about a couple of times, Mark Souza. He's written a horror story. It's called Appliances Included. A couple, their son, and their cat get into a new house. They have a new house. And the kid is like 4 years old, and then he comes back, him and the cat, as they are packing, you know, he's playing with the cat, and he goes into the living room, and then he comes back a few minutes later saying the cat is gone. They look for the cat, can't find him. And so they think, you know, well, maybe the cat just, you know, went outside, and he'll come back when he's hungry. And unfortunately, the next day, the cat still hasn't come back. Trying to lure it with food doesn't work. So the kid's upset, and the mom... This is a small town, so the mom goes around town and posts lost signs of the cat. And there was something, this little scene caught my attention just for the characterization alone, and I'm going to read it. An old woman on an electric scooter wheeled up and eyed the poster. A cigarette dangled from her livery lips. Red-ringed eyes shifted from Taffy's photo to Mary, Taffy being the cat. "Your cat?" she asked. "Yeah." "I wouldn't put it there. Kids in the neighborhood really love that band. Cover Binky instead, the schnauzer. They found him on the parkway last week. Not a happy ending, if you know what I mean." Mary ripped down the poster covering pins and needles and stapled a new one up over Binky. When she turned, she noticed the clear tube under the woman's nose and the grand tank mounted to the back of her scooter. "Is it safe to smoke on oxygen?" The old woman cackled. "I'm 92. At my age, it's not safe to do anything." That brief characterization, that brief little dialogue... That got me. I love it. Mark Souza is very good at characterizing characters. So Mary learns a little bit about the house that they bought. Further on into the story, Mary learns something about the house, that it used to be a sanatorium. It used to be a loony bin. It was run by two brothers, I do believe, and they were arrested shortly thereafter, like 1950s, because of some kind of scam. They kept on collecting Social Security checks even after... the patients would pass away. The only problem was, nobody ever found the bodies. When questioned, the two owners said they just disappeared. Of course, Mary and her husband, you know, write off that it's the, you know, ravings and delusions of a 92-year-old woman, so they don't think anything of it. And then something happens later that night, which then I'm not going to spoil it, but something happens. It's a very good short story by Mr. Mark Souza. The characterization, as I said before, it's brief, but it sticks with you. And I liked this story. It is also free on Smashwords. I would recommend it if you like a good spooky story. And that's it for me.
Okay, sounds good. Buck, what have you got?
Well, this week I've got a story that was pointed out to me. It's actually by a friend of a friend. It's his first sold and published work, and it is available in this month's Clark's World magazine. It is called In Which Faster Than Light Travel Solves All of Our Problems by Chris Staback. He was actually a writing program called Clarion down in Southern California this summer with another friend of mine. And I believe this is actually one of the stories that had been worked on as part of that workshop, which wound its way up into the paying magazine Clark's World. And it is about a pilot who is in, you know, the... far, far future. But really, in a way, it's almost not about that. It's really about a man who is living and working in these conditions in which he spends basically the entirety of his life alone. Faster than light travel, space travel is just kind of the means to alienate him. Mm-hmm. The basic outline of the plot is that he winds up as part of his job as kind of a for-hire cargo person who will carry pretty much anything, anywhere, anytime, if you've got the money to pay his rates, is going to pick up some obscure, hidden little package on an asteroid and happens to find a person there on the asteroid where really nobody should be, nobody would want to be, and with no real means of life support. And so... really kind of out of the somewhat of a desire not to be a murderous schmuck, he picks the guy up. And then through the, you know, many, many hours of emptiness between these various different locations. You know, this passenger he picks up kind of starts to talk and tell him about his life. And that's really where the story comes from, is the interaction or lack thereof between these two characters. Does have a bit of a twist ending. I mean, not quite an M. Night Shyamalan ending, but it's something to not spoil. It is a pretty interesting little psychological study. It is, you know, pretty quick. It's a quick read. It's not a particularly lengthy and involved short story. Definitely a good first piece to get sold and get out there and start building your name. And again, that is Chris Staback with two B's.
All right. I think that sounds good. So we'll go on to the Bloody Pen of the Ranting Editor.
Listening to the Short Story Geeks podcast at shortstorygeeks.com has been clinically proven to make you smarter and more attractive. That's shortstorygeeks.com.
Not actually clinically proven. May cause confusion or spontaneous fits of giggling. Void where prohibited.
The Bloody Pen of the Ranting Editor!
Okay, and this week on the Bloody Pen of the Ranting Editor, something that I would like to talk about that has cropped up in darn near everything I've ever edited. And that is, you know, something it was kind of brought to my attention by getting, you know, down to the nitty-gritty, starting to work on the next roar, and noticing this cropping up and wanting to talk a little bit about it. And that is the repetition of particular words. It's something that you often find in, especially writers who haven't had it basically beaten out of them by editors, because it's kind of a natural impulse. You're thinking, you're writing this, you know, all of these sentences, all of these words, and your mind will kind of get stuck in a groove like a needle on a record. If anybody listening actually remembers needles and records.
I remember needles and records.
But you tend to think of the perfect word for your situation. Yeah, I'm not necessarily talking about the or and or said or anything. There are other arguments to be had about words like that. But you have something like particularly. It's particularly stunning that this is particularly interesting, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of gets stuck in your head. You know, you think, oh, that's a great word. I'm going to use that word in this sentence. And then two or three sentences later, you're still talking about the same idea. And so you're like, oh, well, I'll just use that word because it's already been drug up to the forefront of your mind. But in terms of really writing, you really don't want to really use the same words over and over again. You can kind of get away with it in speech because, you know, it's generally not something you can go back and revise and edit. But in a story, you want to kind of take a look and see if you wind up using the same word over and over and over and over and over again. Even just two or three times in the same span of 3 to 4 lines, you really want to try to find a better way to say it the second time or the first time or whichever. And this is something, like I say, it is so deeply ingrained in people that it's never going to be something that you really pay that much attention to on a first pass, because really you're trying to just get the words out. But when you go back, if you're reading something before releasing it, it's something to keep an eye on, because it's really, really easy to do. It's easy to overlook, but it really does make your writing feel more repetitive, a bit more amateurish. And it really is something that a lot of times you need that third person, that beta reader, that outside perspective to come and look at it and say, oh, you used that word like 6 times in that paragraph. You need to take a look at it. You know, it's something that the red pens from all of my English teachers would really kind of highlight to me. And like I said, it's something that you're going to keep doing until it's basically beaten out of you by third parties. So consider this the first lash. And you know, something that everybody's, if you're reading style guides and writing books, and you know, they'll say that, but it's really easy to say something like that. It's really, really hard to put into practice and actually successfully do. So just kind of keep in mind when you are doing your second pass, your third pass, your last little look over before posting it up and hitting that submit button or sending it off to your editor or whatever, that have you looked at the word choices, and are you using the same words over and over again? There is one kind of mild exception that people may kind of try to fall back on. It's a literary device that you may have heard called parallelism, which is not necessarily the same thing as repeating particular word choices. A parallelism will be when you use kind of the same turns of phrase to introduce the same sort of things. Like you introduce every new section of your work with a similar sounding phrase or similar sounding sentence. That creates that sort of parallel that pulls back to it. Or within a paragraph, if you're listing things off, or listing various different options, you list them in the same type of sentence structure that's a parallelism, that's not necessarily repeating the same words over and over again. And that's something that can be very powerful when it's used correctly. It can be dull and repetitive when it's not. But, I mean, that's a more acceptable form of repetition. You do have to be careful about when you're claiming to be using that versus when you're being just kind of lazy and using the same words over and over again.
It doesn't have to be an individual word either. It can be a phrase or any kind of a... Like I'm a big one for using the larger picture is a phrase that I use or something along those lines to talk about a grander scheme than a specific thing. That's a case where there's a phrase that I am prone to abusing until it squeals.
Yeah, and that's the thing about this. In and of itself, the larger picture, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, these words, there's nothing wrong with using these words. It's just a matter of not overusing them, not abusing them, kind of use them and then move on and say it a different way the next time, a way that kind of refines your point.
Well, unless Greg has some spectacular insight on this topic.
I don't have anything spectacular, but I have coincidences to talk about. Okay. I'm going to make it brief because I have been reading The Elements of Style just for, fun and giggles.
Yes, we are that big of a bunch of geeks that we sit around reading the Elements of Style for fun.
It's
but
great.
It's so good.
I know it is. I'm saying that's my point, is we are that big a bunch of geeks that we sit there reading it.
Because I remember reading about the paragraph when it's you saying repeating oneself. Well, he was talking about the nature and beauty of brevity. In other words, trim down the words. You were talking about using that phrase, Nietzsche?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Professor Strunk Jr. would disapprove. He would say, trim it down, mister. And he would say it three times, because he usually did that when he was teaching. I just thought it was a very interesting little coincidence to talk about. And God only knows I am bad about repeating myself in one paragraph. I even caught myself doing that when I was writing my next novella. I'm like, well, Buck would be disapproving if I did that. So that's another little coincidence. I thought of you, Buck, when I was writing.
That's probably for the best.
All right, on to the intro.
Hello, listeners. How are you? Fantastic. Because you're listening to the Short Story Geeks podcast at shortstorygeeks.com. I'm wearing a headset.
Not actually Isaiah Mustafa. Isaiah Mustafa's fees are way out of our budget. Void where prohibited.
For intro this week, I just have a little plug or mention or whatever you want to call it that I will be at Further Confusion on January 12th through 16th of this coming year. That will be in the San Jose Convention Center, San Jose Marriott in California. And it's a furry convention. And I will be in an area referred to as the Furry Marketplace. I don't actually have my usual dealer room table this time around because I was too slow and didn't get one in time. But I did manage to get into the Furry Marketplace, which is sort of like an artist alley kind of area. You set up every morning, you break down every night. And so I will have a table there where I will be selling Suburban Jungle books, Never Never books, bits of artwork, and my buttons. I will have whatever I can fit into a suitcase every morning, basically, and take down to the Furry Marketplace. I hope everybody will come by and see me. And actually, we're all going to be there, aren't we?
Yes, I will be there.
Yep. So we're going to try and get together, do some sort of podcast-related thing while we're there. It might just be we'll go sit and have dinner and record a bunch of silly nonsense and see what bits we can use. But we haven't worked out what that is yet, so we'll let you know on our next show.
If you have any ideas for what we should do when we're all in the same room, let us know.
Yes, and we'll get to that just in a minute in the feedback section. How about you, Greg?
Speaking of Further Confusion, I thought I would mention that I will be with Fur Planet as usual, and I think Buck will be as well, or at least I hope so.
Yep.
And could there be a brand new spanking new novel by yours truly at Further Confusion? Could there be a limited edition cover of that novel at Further Confusion? Let's hope so. And I would also like to ask the other question. Could a certain radio show called The Graveyard Shift be coming back? And would it be on live stream? I don't know. You tell me. And finally, I'm going to pimp something that doesn't belong to me at all. Darth Vader versus Adolf Hitler, They Fight Again at the Epic Rap Battles of History Season 2. And if you like the Epic Rap Battles of History, you're going to love this one. They pulled out all the stops. And that's it for me.
Okay. Buck.
All right. I've got a plug here for this week. I was talking to Fuzzwolf. He was very sad that my Cyber Monday plug was done on the day we recorded and was over and done with by the time we released. So now this time they're doing another holiday sale that's a little bit longer. So it will still be going on by the time this podcast comes out. It actually started before recording. It started on December 10th and it's running all the way through December 18th. That is good for 10% off of everything in the store. You just have to enter the coupon code MUFFIN at the end of your shopping experience. Then I will also be at Further Confusion. I will be spending most of my time at the Fur Planet table during the day, at least. You know, of course, running around, hanging around, having fun in the evenings. And I'd also love it if people would come by and support me as I attempt to retain my title of Iron Artist. Apparently, that is going to be back on the schedule after a lapse of a couple of years. I've been informed that they have the main stage for, I believe it's Saturday afternoon. So in the past, it's always been a really fun event, a really good audience show, a really interesting sort of Iron Chef style art show with a secret ingredient for art, and then a short time in which we have to make something amazing with live judging, etc. So come and check that out.
Yeah, I am a previous Iron Artist, actually, from Further Confusion myself, and I can tell you it's a lot of fun. And actually, I was a judge for a while on that, too, so I'm a big believer in the Iron Artist show, so it's always a great show.
So, but you're not going to be judging this time, right?
I have not been approached, so I don't know. Sometimes Further Confusion events are a little arranged at the last nanosecond. So.
Right. And dealing with Further Confusion, I know last year you were a panelist for the Match Game Show, or whatever they called it. Are you going to be in any game shows this time?
As I say, I have not been approached, so I don't know for sure.
Could be at the very last minute.
Yep. That, I believe, is all done, or mostly done by Kenster Fox, and I haven't spoken to him about it. So I'll bug him on Twitter.
You do that.
Okay, well, we also have our usual call for audience participation, suggestions, news items, general plugs, just feedback in general. You know, we love to hear from you and we love to respond to you. We've had a lot of very good discussions about just topics of whatever people are interested in. As long as it has something to do with short stories, we'll be happy to talk about it.
Don't talk about my fake voice, though.
No, we won't talk about Greg's fake voice.
No.
Anyway, to reach us, you can leave comments on the website, or you can email us. I am theneech@gmail.com, theneech, all one word there. And how about you guys?
I am graveyardgreg@gmail.com.
You can reach me at buckcturner@baddogbooks.com, or on Twitter as editorbuck.
And let's see, what else we got? If you would like to sponsor the show, we do have a sponsorship spot open, and you can contact me for the details about how that works. You can subscribe to the show via the RSS feed, which is on the shortstorygeeks.com website, floating in a coffee cup for no readily apparent reason, or via our feed on iTunes. You can also follow the show on Twitter as @ShortStoryGeeks. So if you'll come back in 3 weeks, our next show will be on January 5th to get around the holidays. And in the meantime, we need a sign-off. Anybody have a sign-off?
Sign-off. Well, we were only going to do this for, what, 6 episodes, and now we've done 16 episodes.
That's true. In fact, this is number 17.
This is going to be our 17th episode. So, yeah, we're doing good.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Huzzah!
Hooray!
Hooray!
We don't suck. At least not much.
No. only when it's a straw in a soda do we suck. Soda.
Yay?
Yay.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
This has been episode 17 of the Short Story Geeks podcast, with your hosts The Niche, Buck Turner, and Graveyard Greg, with additional material by Laurie Roby. Intro and outro music provided by the Rat City Brass at ratcitybrass.com. Incidental music provided by freemusicarchive.org and the PodSafe Music Network at musicalley.com. All music used with permission under the Creative Commons license or by its creator. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Defend yourself. No more time for talk. And Grizzly, what the hell?
You never heard him ready when you are, Grizzly?
No.
Okay.
Are you dating yourself again? Are you a cheap date?
No, I don't date myself. I'm married.
No, that never stopped anyone else.